Time now to welcome to the program longtime director of a care ministry in Colorado, Barb Roberts. Hi there, Barb.
Hello.
Thanks
How
for
are you?
Joining us. Well, I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank
good,
you.
Good, good. Well, not everyone in America is doing well, and that's the reason that you've written a book called Helping Those Who Hurt. And I have to say, I love your book. I've read tons of books on all sorts of subjects, including quite a few books on, you know, caretaking people, mm-hmm. helping people who suffer. And your book is excellent because you cover such a wide variety of reasons for suffering. You know, usually we think of just trying to help someone who is dealing with death in the family.
Right.
And certainly
right.
that's about the most traumatic. But there are so many other things that cause us tremendous grief and sorrow. And so you've covered this huge variety, and I so appreciate that. So as we move through the program, we'll just cover all sorts of different topics, whether it's
okay.
you know, a marriage falling apart, or your teenage son is addicted to meth, or who knows what all, and how we can best come alongside families and people who are grieving and suffering. And I like how you actually pointed out in the beginning of the book, Barb, that we do need to understand depression, because depression can often come into play, I mean, serious clinical depression, when you are suffering some kind of grief. What would you want listeners to know right off the bat about depression?
Well, for one thing, as you said, Debbie, that it's very, very common.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for those who struggle with it on in a serious way, there is help available.
Mm-hmm.
For those who occasionally struggle with, gee, I'm having a really sad day. That's normal.
Yeah.
That's very normal. And it's okay. And it doesn't mean for the person who is a person of faith that there's something wrong with you or there's mm-hmm. something wrong with your faith or your relationship with God.
Right.
That it's something that many of us struggle with from
mm-hmm.
time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But there are different layers of depression.
Yeah.
And it's so important for us to look at those and to get the help that we need when we are struggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so sometimes we need to recommend professional help.
Yeah.
If we can tell that it's pretty serious depression here. It's affecting maybe their sleep, their eating patterns, and all of that stuff, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about, we'll just kind of take this in order as you presented it in the book.
Sure.
And by the way, the book again is called Helping Those Who Hurt. One of the first things you tackle is that serious illness where someone's perhaps hospitalized. Maybe it was a car accident. Maybe it was a heart attack. Who knows? And you talk about what to do, what to not do, what people need in that situation. What kinds of advice would you like to give us there?
Well, what I would like to say is just a reminder that hospital stays and hospital visits today are much different than they were even 10 years ago.
Mm.
You know, somebody has a mastectomy and they're only in the hospital maybe one night or two nights.
Yeah.
Somebody has open heart surgery and they might be in the hospital 5 or 6 days.
Maybe.
So
yeah. Yeah.
It's really different
mm-hmm.
and care for the person mm-hmm. who has the illness is different. Because think about a major surgery, the fact that 10, 15, 20 years ago, one was in the hospital for a much longer period of time.
Right.
When they would go home from the hospital, they were a little bit further along than
mm-hmm.
they are now.
Yeah.
So hospital care is only part of care for an illness.
Mm.
Part of it is at-home care afterwards.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was always that piece, but it's different now, and it's more needed to visit someone and care for someone and pray for someone and bring food to someone afterwards as probably much more than it was in previous time.
Now, that's
so
interesting.
That's the first thing
that
I'd
is
like
very
to
interesting
because
we don't even think about that. When someone is discharged from the hospital, we're like, phew, okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're done with the crisis. And,
right.
and you're bringing this to the forefront of our minds that, you know what, actually they might need more help now.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
And also, because hospital stays are so short, sometimes it's hard to get up and visit the person
yeah.
at the hospital
mm-hmm.
because they're in there such a short time.
Sure.
But having said that, it's still an important piece of an illness, a surgery, an accident is to visit that person. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried to, in the book, list some do's and don'ts for the hospital visit.
Yes.
Some ways that are helpful and some ways that are not helpful. Mm-hmm. A classic that any of us can fall into when we visit someone, it triggers a thought in our mind of an illness we've had, a surgery our friend or our family member has had, an accident that we heard about. So let me tell you about my appendicitis.
Yes.
And that is so unhelpful for somebody that is going through whatever the issue is. It's not about me. It's about them. And so my caregiving is not about what I would want or what happened to me. It's about what is good for them.
Oh, that's so good because, I mean, we've all experienced that, haven't we? You know, had a C-section. I remember this. And, you know, people come in and tell me all their horror stories about their C-sections. I'm like, you know, that's not really helping me right now.
It is not. You don't want to hear that, no matter how much you love the person.
No, and people often also like to diagnose what's going on with you and say, well, I think it could be this. I was like, you're not the doctor.
No matter how much training you have had. And by the way, if you are going to visit as a friend, even if you are a doctor, you wear a different hat. And that's a good reminder.
Ooh, that is good.
If you're not their doctor, then it's important to visit as a friend.
What do you say? I mean, you know, you want to be offering some comfort, maybe even some hope. What kinds of things do you say to someone who maybe is facing a serious, prolonged illness? Maybe their life won't quite ever be exactly the same again. What do you say?
That's a great question, Debbie. It's important to try to find out where they are. So often, there's sort of this little tip for people. It sounds so simple that it almost sounds silly, but it's the ABCs of giving care. A is that you know. B is who you are. And C is that you care. So the first one is, you know, and you can kind of reverse A and B depending on how close you are to the person. I might say, Debbie, this is Barb, and I just heard that you've had a pretty scary diagnosis, and I am so sorry. You know, it takes all of the kind of secrets out of the situation. Sometimes we dance around the pink elephant in the living room, and for the person who's hurting, they just need to know that somebody cares, that somebody knows. Not that you can or will try to fix it, but that you just want to be there for them. So that might be how I would start.
Okay.
I'm just so sorry. I just heard that you've been diagnosed with breast cancer. And I'm wondering how I might help you. And sometimes the answer is, you know, I don't know, I'm just so scared. Or sometimes the answer is anger. But somewhere in that conversation, depending on sensing where that person is, I might say something like, are you afraid? And
just, you know, going right for the emotions that you know they're feeling. And again, we try to sidestep it like we're all scared of these feelings, but you're actually giving them permission to voice those feelings that they probably need to talk about.
They really do. And again, you need to be very sensitive. You know, I never make a hospital visit without praying on my way. God, give me the strength. Give me the words. Close my mouth when I need to be quiet.
Boy, that's good right there. So, again, we might need to ask them questions. So, you know, are you, you know, this must make you feel angry or fearful, or, you know, maybe give them the opportunity to see if they want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because you say that they sometimes need to tell their story.
That's right. And, you know, sometimes, let's say they are a cancer patient and they are in the midst of a second round of chemo. Sometimes it's hard to keep telling that story, but they need to.
I bet.
And they're not wanting to belabor the point with those they live with. So sometimes you, as the caregiver, can listen yet again to the story that they need to tell.
What about if they're angry with God? What about if they start saying, you know, I don't know why this is happening to me? You know, why? How could God let this happen? Well, if you're a Christian and you're standing there, you feel like you're almost having to defend God. And I'm sure you've been hit with those kinds of questions before. What's the right way to handle that?
I have been hit with those questions many times over the years. And number one, I want to give us all the freedom to say, God doesn't need us to defend him. Number two, God can handle it if someone is angry with him. And it is not up to me to try to have this magic bullet answer that I can pull out and say, well, here's the reason, because I don't know the reason.
Right.
And often I will just say, you know, I wish I knew that too. I am so sorry. That must make you feel really lonely.
Wow.
Or really deserted.
Now, see, I would have never thought of that, because I feel like when someone asks the question that I must come up with an answer. And I think we all fall, well, we don't all. I mean, you're smarter than me on this, but I mean, I think it's very common for us to then scramble around trying to find something to kind of defend God or give a reason for why this is happening. And you're saying just to admit that it's okay to admit that we don't know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's freeing.
And it really is freeing. To recognize, I mean, I don't see anywhere in the Bible that tells us that we have all the answers and that God is going to show us why certain things happen. You know, we are instructed to care and to come alongside and help share another person's burdens, but we are not given the instruction by God that you have to have an answer for why he, as a sovereign God, has chosen certain things in a person's life.
Okay. In a moment, let's come back and let's talk about abuse. It could be child abuse. It could be a wife who is being beaten by her husband. It could be any number of things where someone is being abused, has been hurt, assaulted. How do you gently come alongside and support that person? And how much do you talk about what's happened? We'll get to all that in just a moment with Barb Roberts. Her book is called Helping Those Who Hurt, A Handbook for Caring and Crisis. My guest this hour, Barb Roberts. She's a longtime director of a care ministry in Colorado. Her new book, Helping Those Who Hurt, A Handbook for Caring and Crisis. Let's talk about those who have been abused, and abuse comes in many different forms. You talk about emotional abuse, spiritual abuse, physical abuse, psychological abuse. Gosh, we can talk everywhere from kids who are molested to a woman, an adult woman who may be raped or battered by a husband. How do we come alongside and help and comfort those people? I think part of our problem is we're not sure exactly how much we're supposed to talk about. So what kind of guidance do you have?
Well, again, it depends on the relationship, of course. If I receive a call in my office for an appointment and someone comes in to meet with me and we begin talking and it is obvious that this woman is wanting to talk about some things that she's gone through, then I first of all need to remember sort of the overall tenet of caring for another person, how valuable the gift of listening to another is. You know, it's like you wrapped up a wonderful, beautiful box and put it in their hands by giving them the gift of listening. So listening is crucial in all cases, but certainly in the case where somebody has been abused. The other thing that I want to have as sort of a framework for coming alongside of someone who has any kind of abuse is that the same issues apply as far as grief and loss as when you lose a family member to death. You know, there's anger, there's depression, there's maybe bargaining with God, there's all of the stages which we talk about in the book as far as grief and loss issues,
yes,
apply to abuse as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, caring for another person is messy.
Yes.
It would be nice if it was this neat little pattern,
mm-hmm,
where they had gone through the anger and the depression, and then they move into the acceptance, and it just isn't that way.
Mm.
So, you know, there can be all kinds of issues and layers,
yes,
dealing with the abuse of another person. And I'm not talking about, we're not talking about therapy here, obviously. This book is for,
yes,
caregivers,
yeah,
not a therapist who's,
right,
going to dig into. So,
yes,
we probably just need to say
that's a good point, because you're not a therapist, and,
right,
and at some point you may need to refer this person to
that's
get some
exactly
counseling.
That's exactly
right. Yeah.
But as a caregiver for somebody who is struggling, mm, there's going to be issues of shame and was it my fault,
mm,
and, you know, the battered wife. There's a list in here that I've put together of just typical issues, but often, gee, I must have caused this somehow.
Mm.
It's my fault. If I just had done it right, whatever it is.
Mm.
So, you know, the shame and then the anger.
Mm.
And I think the best thing we can do for the person is give them the opportunity to talk,
mm,
and know that we are not judging them.
Yeah.
We're not even going to take sides and judge the batterer at that moment, because that's not,
mm,
what they need either.
Mm.
They need a caring, listening presence.
Yeah.
They need us to be there to say, you know, if here's a phrase that's helpful sometimes.
Okay.
I've never been in your shoes,
mm,
but if I had, I might be struggling with.
Mm.
And it gives them the opportunity to either feed back to you, well, no, that's not quite it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that kind of is. I am struggling with just feeling kind of dirty,
mm,
or feeling really, really ticked.
Yeah.
Or feeling so betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're not telling them how we're feeling, we're saying, I think if I were in your shoes, I might be feeling.
Yes.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
And then they can feed back, well, no, that's not quite it.
Mm-hmm.
But
again,
it gives them sort of a place to start.
Again, it sounds like a huge part of helping people in their time of grief, whatever that grief is they need to be able to vocalize emotions. Is that
a
kind of a big part of this?
Yes. It
okay.
really is.
I'm sensing that. And so us coming alongside and being a good listener, not necessarily having all the answers, just being
right.
a good listener, I take it empathizing. When they go on and on about their grief and how sad and horrible they feel, you know, it's hard to just sit there and listen and not say a thing, and probably
yeah.
that's not even appropriate not to say anything. But what do you say? I mean, do you say, well, I can understand how you would feel that way? Or, I mean, what do you say?
Well, I don't want to pick on you, Debbie, but you don't want to say I understand how you feel.
Okay, well, yeah, I don't know what we're supposed to say, so let me know.
Because we don't know how they feel.
Okay.
You know, and on the other extreme, I'm not talking, I don't want to be a lump.
Yeah, and just be silent.
So just
yeah.
sit there and
mm-hmm.
nod your head.
Yes, yeah, so
but
what do we do?
There are a lot of nonverbals
mm.
that, you know, eye contact,
mm.
leaning forward,
mm.
just the standard good listening skills that show a person you're really engaged with them.
Mm.
And then when it's obvious that there is time for feedback, because like I said and like you indicated, we don't know what to do. We don't want to just be this lump.
Yeah.
You might say, boy, I just can't imagine how hard that must be for you.
Mm.
Or something like, I am just inside hurting so much with you right now,
mm.
or something, you know, you might even reach over and just, and be sensitive about this, but
yeah.
a gentle touch on the hand. There is an amazing ministry
mm.
of healing touch that happens when you're caring for another person.
Uh-huh.
And it obviously needs to be appropriate,
yeah.
but just that touch on the hand to show that, you know, you're still there with them.
Yes.
If someone is crying, sometimes an appropriate phrase can be, tell me more about the tears.
Mm.
Tell me what that's about for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be obvious, but it may be not obvious.
Mm. Mm. Okay, those were some good things to say, because, again, I would think we sometimes just don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, it strikes me, too, that if you're on the phone with someone, because maybe
yeah.
it's a relative who had their child pass away or something, and they're across the country,
right.
now all of a sudden you can't give the verbal, or, I mean, excuse me, the eye contact thing. You
right.
can't really reach out and hold their hand. That must be especially difficult.
You know, it is. I mean, it's important to be able to listen through the silence with somebody, but you've brought up just an excellent point. On the telephone, ministering over the telephone or over email or texting,
yes.
as so many of us do now, silences seem much longer
yeah.
when you can't look at a person.
Yes.
So though I am a very strong proponent about ministering through silences,
yes.
just keep that in mind, that
yeah.
when it's on the phone,
mm.
it needs to be shorter. And
mm.
so you might say something like, boy, I'm with you, or I'm still here, or I'm listening, or take your time.
Yeah. Ooh, just saying, now see, that's a great thing to say, I'm listening. Because it lets them know that you're engaged. You have
right.
you're not drifting away thinking about
right.
what you're going to eat later on. You know, you're
right.
with them and
right.
encouraging them to continue. That's a great little technique. All right, see all these practical things I'm learning. In a moment, let's come back and let's talk about dealing with actual grief from death. Especially hard is when a child dies in a family,
yeah.
and the grief there is so much different than when a 95-year-old great-grandparent passes away. And so let's talk about how to deal with that. Maybe an imminent death where someone is slowly going away because of cancer or something like that. How do we help and comfort those dealing with that kind of grief? We'll get there in just a moment with my guest, Barb Roberts, her new book, Helping Those Who Hurt. Back on the program with Barb Roberts. She's a longtime director of a care ministry in Colorado. Her book is called Helping Those Who Hurt. Let's briefly talk about dealing with death and trying to comfort someone who has experienced the death of a loved one, especially if that's a child. How do you, I mean, again, those questions, the anger, why did this happen? They've lived such a short life. What can we possibly say in a situation like that or do in a situation like that?
Be available.
Okay.
Go to be with them mm. wherever they are, whether, you know, it's at the hospital or at their home.
Mm.
Just because you don't know what to say, don't let that keep you away from loving on somebody. So that would be the first thing I would say. Make sure that you remember that you don't know exactly how they're feeling.
Yeah.
And then probably the next thing you would want to do as you are there is just hug them or, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. wrap your arm around their shoulder and just say, I am so, so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably where you start.
Yes.
And, you know, again, be really, really careful. God gave us scripture to use, but we need to use it so wisely and so directed by Him.
Mm.
It is never helpful, no matter how strong a Christian family it is who has lost a child. It is never helpful right out of the chute to say, you know, God had a greater purpose for your child, or He must have known you could handle it, or something like Romans 8:28, God causes all things to work together for good for those who love Him.
Right.
That is absolutely true, and we absolutely believe that, and it is absolutely the wrong time to share it grief care.
So true, because that platitudes and verses right off the bat, like you said, are just it's just not what they need at that moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So later on, perhaps, down the road, perhaps. Okay.
Yes.
What about impending death, where you know it's going to happen, it's a terminal case or something like that. Any special advice in that arena?
Well, I just want to, it's interesting you ask that because I have my cell phone on vibrate right here because we have a dear lady who left Thursday, so it's been a week. Her family was told that it would be a couple days, and she still is with us. And I've been with her three adult daughters, and it's so helpful if somebody understands what I and others call the roller coaster of grief during the dying process. And it's sort of like this. You are so, you're grieving so much that your, in this case, their elderly mother is going to die, even though she knows the Lord and will be with him. And they are so sad, and they gear up for saying goodbye, and they have said goodbye, and then she doesn't die. And so then they go through the struggles of, oh, this is too hard. It's taking too long. And then they feel guilty because they almost think, well, are we wanting her to die? And then they know we're going to have to do this all over again. And this dear family has been doing this for five extra days. And sometimes it goes on much longer than that. And so even just normalizing that for them has been helpful, so they have told me, to help them understand that this, it is hard. It's just really, really hard. And, you know, I just thought the other day, coming into this world is difficult, going through that birth canal, and leaving this world is as well. It's, and so I think helping people know that you care and that you're with them and that it's hard and you understand that, and it's okay to struggle through that journey.
Let's switch to a troubled marriage, because you know, there's profound grief if a marriage is about to break apart. And that can be almost like the death of a loved one, because it might be the death of a family unit. So what kinds of tips or insights would you have for us about trying to comfort and support those and help those who are going through perhaps a divorce?
Oh, that's good. You have to realize as the caregiver that, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, the stages of grief apply, certainly. And, you know, they go in and out of those stages. But there's another huge piece that most often you don't have in the in death, and that is the whole betrayal piece. So it's a different level of caregiving to recognize their anger is certainly the grief and loss and that their family's broken up, but they also are betrayed and set aside or pushed aside or cast aside,
rejected,
if they're the person who has been betrayed. Maybe it's an affair, you know, maybe it came out of the blue for them, and often in a situation like this, let's take the affair, perhaps the spouse who has strayed comes back and says, you know, I'm sorry, I've blown it. And it may be too little, too late. And the spouse who has been betrayed is just not ready or not willing to reconcile. So I guess I bring up all these different parts because it's complicated grief. There's so many different pieces. And what we as a caregiver need to do, first of all, is just recognize that. Recognize that it's not helpful in most cases to take sides, even though it's pretty obvious what, you know, in certain cases what might have happened. And also to recognize we may not know the whole story. So to jump in and assume we know the whole story isn't helpful. What we can do for the party who has come to us is listen, not have quick advice, be willing and available to pray with them, to come alongside of them, to offer resources that are available, but to not have a quick fix and an easy answer.
Yeah, and you're very wise to point out that there are two sides to every story, and so if you're just hearing from one person, even if it does seem like they were the ones that were rejected and jilted and, you know, trounced upon, you know, you don't really have the whole picture, perhaps. And
right.
So giving advice could actually be the exact wrong thing to do because you don't have the whole story.
Yeah.
Good advice there. Let's talk about addiction. Lots of parents, families torn apart by addiction. It could be their, you know, teenage son or something addicted to alcohol or meth or something horrible. It could be a dad who's addicted to pornography, and that's destroying the family. I mean, it comes in so many varieties these days, eating disorders.
Yeah.
So if we know that a family is being torn apart by that, boy, that's a tough one. It's one that I think we try to dance around because it's kind of like uncomfortable to even get in there and wade into the waters of addiction.
Yes. You know, one of the things that I probably would want to say first of all is that this is a good case to recognize when we're in over our head.
Uh-huh.
If we're a family member, then we deal with, and I'll talk about that in a minute, certain issues. But as a caregiver for a neighbor or a coworker or a friend, make sure that one of your tasks would be to find some resources for them in your town, you know, whether it's counseling, let's say alcohol or drugs, or, you know, what kinds of treatment options are there for the person. So make sure that you recognize this is a time to call for help. That's one thing I would like to say. Another thing, if this is a family member, let's say, let's say it's a teenage son who you know is gone over the top and is really struggling, and at a particular time they are under the influence. A friend of mine who's a certified addictions counselor told me that she never talks to the addiction. In other words, it is not helpful to try to do caregiving and speak to someone and have a long conversation with someone who's under the influence of alcohol or drugs. So that's very helpful to know that don't try to reason them out of things. Don't try to have a long conversation.
Sure.
In this case, if somebody is under the influence, this is crisis intervention work. Get them to help that will keep them from harming themselves, help them to sleep it off if it's alcohol. You know, get them to immediate help, but don't try to reason them out of something when they are at the moment under the influence. So that's another important thing to realize in addiction care. Another thing that is very helpful for a family member who has a loved one, a teenager, a spouse that is addicted, go get help for yourself, whether it's counseling help, whether it's a really solid Al-Anon program. Those things really do help. You know, don't try to struggle as a family member and think you can do this on your own. All that winds up happening is that you become codependent and try to rescue the person. You're not going to be able to do that.
Good point. You know, if we could finish up, there's this wonderful list that you gave in the middle of your book about helpful things to say to people who are grieving. And I just wanted to run through a couple of these sentences because I think I'm going to, like, tear the page out of the book and, you know, put it somewhere safe so that I can refer to it, because I think so many times we just don't know what to say when someone's looking at you kind of, you know, like with that expectant look of, like, you know, what's going to make this better? You know, give me the answers. And you don't know what to say. Here are some of the things that you write down. Simply saying, I am very sad to hear about your loss. I wish I could take your pain away. I don't understand why this has happened to you. I'm asking God to heal you and to show you his hand in all of this. Or how about this one? Take your time. I am here.
Yeah.
That's a
good one. And that's a really good one for when you're on the phone.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go. How about this one? Thank you for trusting me with your feelings. Or how may I pray for you today? That is a good one.
Yeah.
And I've often used that one, so at least I got one right. You know, of just saying, when I don't know what to say, how can I pray for you? It's comforting for that person to know that I am going to pray for them, and it's also a way for them, it's kind of an invitation for them to tell me what's really going on in their heart. How can I pray for them? Some good suggestions. Boy,
it's
this
really
has been
important,
good.
Too, to realize, Debbie, that to ask them what you might pray about, because we might assume the wrong thing. We might assume something that isn't the most important thing to pray about.
That's a good point, yeah. Barb, this has been wonderful. Thank you for sharing all your years of experience, decades of experience in your care ministry. Thanks for sharing all of that wealth of information with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for allowing me to share this resource that I feel God has given me.
Yeah. Thank you very, very much. And we'd like to make several copies of this book available at no cost. So go ahead and send an email to lynn@debbychavez.com. Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N-E. And then request the book, Helping Those Who Hurt. That's the title by Barb Roberts. And we'll see if we can get a free copy to you, whether you're listening live right now or listening later on iTunes. Hopefully we can get that copy to you.